You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Wiggity, welcome back to Between Pages and Friends, a book club podcast hosted by Con and Lauren, two besties who read a lot of books, and John and Kyle, their supportive gamer husbands who've agreed to read with them. I'm Con.
I'm John.
I'm Lauren.
And I'm Kyle. Thanks for joining our Throne of Glass book club. In this episode, we're continuing the final book in the series, Kingdom of Ash, chapters 29 to 44. There will be no spoilers for future chapters here, so if you're reading for the first time, good job. This is a book for big boys and girls, so we're proud of the progress you made. Additionally, this is your mild content warning. We will be discussing themes from this book that include bioluminescent worms and buried treasure. Just kidding. It's mostly torture, trauma, and rocky relationships, actually.
And if you'd like to get connected with a lovely community of other SJM-loving friends to nerd out about these books with, check out our Patreon. You can join our Discord community for $5 a month in the Snack Court tier. If you'd also like early ad-free access to new episodes, merch discounts, a monthly book club, and all the hot goss, you can join the Peachring Book Club tier for $10 a month. You can find our Patreon wherever quality products are sold and also in the show notes and description box below.
Lastly, if you haven't yet, please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Telling your friends and writing a review is the best way to grow our community. And remember, if you don't pass this podcast to 10 of your friends and ask them to do the same by midnight tonight, Rowan will visit you and... Oh, you're into that. Okay. Hmm. Dorian? Okay, him too. Hmm? Manon? No. Yeah. Understandable. Erewhon? Really? Him too? Okay, just forget it. Here's a recent review on Apple Podcasts from our new friend, Mean Lil Brooks, titled The Best Podcast. She writes, I've been listening to this podcast since you all started TOG and loved it from the start. It gets better with each episode, and I feel like I'm just right there discussing and cackling with you guys. My husband hears me from the other room, literally crying laughing every episode, wondering what's wrong with me. I look forward to this every single week. I've enjoyed my second read through of Throne of Glass so much more just because of this podcast and feeling like I've got someone to discuss it with. I need you all to convince my husband to read with me. LOL. I love you guys. Purple Heart. This was not mean at all. Mean Lil Brooks. Aww. We'll call you Nice Lil Brooks.
Oh, you're nice Lil Brooks.
Good Brooks.
You're so nice.
Best Brooks in the land.
Thank you so much for your very kind review. And to Mr. Nice Lil Brooks, this is our formal campaign to convince you to read Throne of Glass. Got it? All right. Now, it's time for our pronunciation guide. Over to you, Con.
Thanks, John. Weird using our real names.
Yeah.
What just has his real Wait names?
Our government names on the podcast. What do we do?
Well, the only name that I have for you this week is Una, another one of Manon's Kraken cousins, also the name of one of the bubble guppies. And that's it. Wow. Now, everyone, let's join hands and jump into this chapter recap with Juan in 3, 2, 1.
Thanks, Quan. And we're hightailing it with Rowan and Gavriel back to the tent with Fenris and Karen, both badly injured, but mostly alive from their fight. Gavriel tends to Fenris, and then Rowan has him heal up Karen, after which he gets him strapped to the table and does his own work. Lorcan and Aelin make it back to the clearing, where Aelin is waiting. Aelin tries to take off the mask. Lorcan and Aelin try to help, but the locks are too complex, which sends Aelin into a massive fit, understandably. Rowan and Gavriel finally arrive with Fenris. Aelin ends up showing Rowan how to use word marks to undo the locks, and she's finally free of the mask and the shackles. As she wraps herself in fire, they notice that she has no scars, zero scars. The healers did so much work that it's like she's in a brand new skin. She goes to Fenris, dying from the broken blood oath. The only thing she could do was to offer her blood oath in order for him to survive, and that's exactly what happens. The little folk show up and lead them to a safe passage away from the camp and to the coast. Over in Aurelia, Dorian continues to practice his shifting and where the power is summoned from within him. The shadows arrive in camp with bad news. The Eelway group they were supposed to meet are all dead. Manon and the 13 dig the graves with their bare hands. Dorian goes to summon Gavin, but Cultain shows up instead. She confirms the third key is in Morath and gives him some advice to sneak in. Then he shifts into a raven, and Manon sees him after catching some of their conversation. Up north, Adian and the army decide to retreat to Perrinth, and then Adian's aura drops into the negatives in what I vote to be his worst moments towards Lysandra. RIP, my dude. Back over in Windyland, we find our group traveling through a large cave system, Aelin finally becoming aware enough to at least talk with Rowan a little. She takes a little swim in the underground lake. Then a boat comes up to the edge, summoned by the little folk. They are to take it to the coast and leave and head to Aurelia from there. Right as they leave, the little folk hand over the crown of Mab to Aelin, the same one that Maeve had made her wear and was lost over the edge of the throne room in Dornell. They continue their path through the tunnels. That sentence was chapter 36, everyone. Just what a chapter. They finally pass a cave, and Aelin wants to go check it out. Lorcan and Aelin hash it out alone in the boat. The cave is filled with gold and other loot. Basically, it's like a burial site. Fenris finally shifts back to his fey form, and he and Aelin embrace. Aelin finds two rings for herself and Rowan, and they exchange them in the cave. Cute. And here's 38. Where they keep going. Another riveting chapter. We join Kale and Irene later as Anio prepares for the siege. Morath has been drumming to stir up fear, like literal drums. As the drumming halts, Kale and his father share a brief word. Bird. And then they fight. Just kidding. His father tells him that his mother left with his brother and her court in the middle of the night a while back. Big surprise. Then he tells Kale that Irene is pregnant, and the army begins to march. Back with the witches, Manon decides to visit Petra Blueblood. You like that one?
That surprised me.
Manon decides to visit Petra Blueblood and the Faring Gap to try and convince her to join them. Dorian will actually go with them to practice some of his shifting to see if he's ready for Morath, kind of like a trial run. Then, finally on a ship bound for Terrasen, Aelin and Rowan have a chat about being mates as well as their future, and then they rock the boat.
Oh my god!
Dorian ends up heading into the Faring Gap to scout ahead, in disguise, to see if any of the matrons are there and to confirm that Petra is. And he's successful, so Manon goes in. She gives a compelling speech to Petra and the Iron Teeth Legion there that they should fight Morath together to reclaim their home together or be subject to her grandmother's schemes, which she does tell them about. Finally, in Aurelia and resting at an inn, Aelin has a terrible dream back with Karen, and frickin' Arabin, of all people, is there in her dream too, antagonizing her, literally the worst. And as the party is resting and preparing, something in the skies is headed their way.
Santa!
Dun, dun,
dun. That's it. That's who it is.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
That's the red light in the sky.
Is it a bird?
Is it a plane? No, bird is the word.
Oh, my bad.
Santa with his... Wait, no, he has 8 reindeer, right? Plus sure. 1, including Rudolph? Or is it 12 plus Rudolph?
There's 8. And then Rudolph.
Okay, yeah. Never mind. I was going to make a Santa with his 13 joke, but...
that would have been good. Yep.
That would have been
Santa
it.
Santa and the 13.
Dang it.
We can add 4 reindeer, right?
Yeah.
What would you name them if you were to add 4 new ones?
Blinker.
Blinker?
Blinker.
You have the same code as Fenris and Ailey.
Blinker. Oh my god.
He only talks after like Aylin and Fenris, is that what he said?
His only form of communication.
It'd be just the Pac-Man ghosts, Inky, Blinky, Pinky, god. And Clyde.
Wow. Oh god.
Anyway, on to the book. Chapter 29, where the book let you envision Rowan strapping you down to a table, which nobody wants, am I right? I just had a gif of Dexter tying down one of his victims about to cut him up because I was like, that's what it made me think of. He closed off the tent with the ice and wind. It's like the tarps that Dexter put down and then
getting to work. Gave him the old ministrations, am I right?
Show you some ministrations. This is how you ministrate, boy.
I had notes for this chapter, but then your gif literally just summed it up. And I was like, yeah, that's what happened.
I came back to the notes because I was the first one in and I was like, nobody else added anything. That was just like perfect. A joke.
Yep. No notes.
But
no notes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so for those of you who can't visually see it listening to the podcast, just go ahead and watch all the seasons of Dexter real quick and then come back. You'll get it.
Just for context for this one note.
Yeah, for context for that one note.
Just for chapter 29.
On to chapter 30. Not to denigrate the other emotions and things in this chapter, because there was a lot with her like begging for the things to be taken off.
Yeah.
I just thought like it's also about freaking time that someone else learned word marks. Mm-hmm. And then as you're doing your recap too, they even said like the iron doesn't affect word marks, so the word marks aren't affected by them. That's how they could use them to unlock it. Was there a reason that she couldn't do it herself?
They like chained her hands down.
She couldn't get her blood.
Like that was the whole point of them like having her hands chained so that she couldn't like do word marks herself on the wherever she was inside.
Yeah, but where she was freed and had the gauntlets on still, she couldn't have like got a bit of blood on the tip of the gauntlet and done it.
I see what you're saying.
Thought they said something about it being her blood specifically. Like it was like almost warded against her blood or something.
Yeah, maybe
that would make sense.
Yeah, catch it on to that. Sense. Still though, it's about time. Word marks have been supposedly super useful, and only now have they been like we'll pass this information along.
Yeah, word.
Word. I feel like we've had this conversation though a lot of times of like, why doesn't she teach anybody else? You know, but. I am glad on their boat ride to Aurelia that they did take some time to actually learn that together as a group or whatever. So this whole scene, though, of her just screaming, take it off, and talking about the mask and just, I don't know, all the terror that she had to be going through in that moment was extremely heartbreaking. So I had said last time that I was going to go back and reread some of last chapter chunk so I got the full impact of this scene and this story. So I did do that. And I think that that hit way harder having read it all at one time instead of like stopping like we did. And I was really glad to have done that. And it also like going into all the stuff that happened with Fenris and stuff, I think was a lot more emotional as well. It was just a lot and it's heavy.
Yeah.
This whole chapter chunk, everything Aylin's going through. But that takes us into chapter 31, where it talks about how that she has new skin because literally everywhere on her body had been tortured or whatever, that they had to basically replace her skin, or they did it that way even on purpose just to make sure that all her scars were taken away and stuff. And at first, my initial thought was like, oh, okay. Well, like, you know, she doesn't have the shackles anymore from Endeavor or like other things. But then it went into like the whole sentence of like her oath to Nehemia or her like her stuff with Rowan or like other scars that like meant so much more than just the hardship she has gone through or even just like her training with her calluses and stuff. And that was a lot that hit. I don't know. She's just going through so much.
Yeah, if you really want to punch yourself in the gut, Mads Schofield on Instagram has some incredible fan art of the take it off scene. But it is like hard to look at. I was thinking about like showing you guys some fan art, but that would not be a fun experience with this one.
Check out this fun art I found.
So it's Mad Schofield on Instagram. She has a lot of Throne of Glass art, so there might be some spoilers on there. You might want to wait until you finish Kingdom of Ash to look at her page, but she has some really incredible stuff of Throne of Glass. Like, she did portraits of all of the 13, and like there's almost every character from the books are on her page, but then she's also got some really cool scene art in there as well.
You said her page? What was the first name you said?
Mads.
Mads. Yeah. Okay. I thought you were saying Matt Schofield. And I was like, that's a musician. I was like, that's so weird that he'd be doing fan art. But I mean, I guess, you know, anyone can read the books, but.
He's got a side gig.
Yeah. I was like, well, that name sounds so familiar.
He's I'm waiting for those him. Openings in Riftold.
I was like, he's a blues. Oh, no. He's a blues country singer. So I was like, all right. I mean, I guess. Yeah. He's an artist. Sure.
Anyway.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I had a ton of highlights from chapter 31, but all of them were just me saying that I was crying because I just progressively cried harder and harder over Fenris. And I was a complete mess by the time we got to this scene with him, like taking the blood oath with Aelin. I just love him. I did cry over this in my first read too, so I knew it was coming, and I cried even harder this time. But I just, that was like most of my highlights from this chapter. I just was a mess. I love him. And her ordering him to live, that really got me too. That was a big one.
Well, we left this scene in the middle of the scene for last episode. And so I just thought he was dead. Like, I thought he was going to die. And so in my heart, I was like letting him go, I think, for a couple days, so that when I got back into reading it, when it hit so hard. So like the like literal big breath of shock that I took whenever she offered him the blood oath. And like, I was so excited. I was so happy that I totally cried. For all of this, once the Fenris with the blood oath scene, all of that, I was bawling my eyes out.
There's so much that I want to ask about blood oaths in general after that, but I don't have to now because we might learn later. I'm just so like confused about like how he broke it. Obviously, everybody's saying like, oh, it's unbreakable blood oath sort of thing. I'm like, well, it seems like if you want it hard enough, you could. But also, in terms of telling him to live, is it until she dies that the blood oath is active, or is it like an order he follows for eternity or as long as he would naturally live?
That's a great question about him specifically living, but I do know when Lorkin was taking his blood oath later, spoiler alert, he even said that even after she died, the blood oath would stand for him to like protect Tarrasin and its people. Like that was a sentence I had highlighted.
Yeah.
So I don't know about him with living.
Yeah. Is it live in this moment or like from here on live?
And he's for like, the rest of your life.
My top priority. Like, obviously most of the time, not a big deal, but I wonder if it would come down to it. If like he's in another life or death situation, he would just do everything to live instead of, you know, finishing the fight or something. But
or maybe like he does take a killing blow, but he's now immortal and he just comes back to life.
Yeah. Sorry. Someone told me to live.
Can't kill me.
It'd be interesting if it worked that way. Anyway, mm-hmm. I was also excited because, like, I just mentioned the little folk offhandedly last episode. I was like, oh, they're here.
I know.
Crazy that they're just like three chapters later. Yep.
And they're so cute. I love the description of all their little decorations and stuff. I want to go visit.
Well, and every time they get brought up, I've been saying, like, when do we get to go see where they live? When do we get to go to their little town? And so we got to, and I was really excited about that.
I know that, like, in their descriptions, it says, like, oh, the long little spindly fingers or, like, whatever. I can picture nothing but, like, the
garden
little
gnomes.
Garden gnomes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Or, like, Keebler elves sort of vibe.
For me, it's a literal garden gnome.
So yeah. I just can't get it out of my head. The beard and the hidden eyes and everything. They're just like, hey, man, what the world?
Basically, just, like, different sizes of garden gnomes.
Yeah.
It's funny. Is there fan art of little folk that we can see?
I don't know. I don't think I've ever seen any. Let me look.
Because I would love to have some sort of...
That might be interesting.
I feel like I picture them differently every time. I've had like the little tiny...
Oh, there is some.
Like the little garden gnomes. I've also just had like little toddlers running around.
Just some little babies.
Yeah, just some little kids.
That's just what they call young kids there. Oh, yeah, the little folk.
Oh, see, this one depicts them as like fairies.
Well, they are like fae creatures, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Ooh. Like glowing wings fairies? Is that what you mean?
I mean, I could see that too.
Yeah, same.
Hmm. Kind of creepy, but cute.
Yeah. Drop those in this Discord episode.
Okay.
The Discord episode chat so that we can
It's blurry, but it's cute.
Drop them in.
Oh, that one's so cute.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll find some. I'll just drop them in. All right.
Anyway, little folk are awesome.
Poppy and Branch.
Yeah, Poppy and Branch. They're just trolls. And they're just singing. And all the fae are the Bergens, and they can't find where they live. I believe that. That's canon now. Okay. I just love Rowan in all of these chapter sections. I don't feel like there was a single fault in anything that he did and any of this and how he handled just like Aelin and her whole situation and stuff. Letting her be with Fenris and like waiting for her to come to him.
Yeah.
She was with Fenris in his little fire, her little fire bubble, and he was just like okay with it and just like slept outside. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't like being like some alpha male, whatever, whatever. He was just like letting her do what she needed to do to get taken care of and like be okay and all the thing. And I don't know, I'm just here for it. And I have a lot of notes that I didn't put all of them in, but I have just like highlighted every time because he was just the best. And
he's the best.
I'm just a fan. What a man.
What a man.
What a man, what a man, what a man.
What a male, I guess.
Yeah, what a male.
That's true. He'd get mad at you for saying man.
Randomly at the end of this chapter, I have the biggest like, excuse me, Sarah, what in the God's watch is this? So I just am pointing out this little paragraph because I have no recollection of this. And this just sent me on another rabbit hole. So this is Gavriel telling Elid, they're looking around the forest. And he says, from the ancient wars between the forest spirits. And she was noticing a hillside full of felled trunks and splintered stone. And Gavriel says, some are still waged by them, wholly unaware and unconcerned with the affairs of any realm but this. And then in like his POV, Rowan had never seen the race of ethereal beings far more ancient and secretive than even the little folk. But at his mountain home, set high in the range that they strode toward, he'd sometimes heard the shattering of rocks and trees on dark moonless nights when there was not a whisper of wind on the air nor any storm to cause them.
Crazy.
I don't know what that means. I don't
know. Neither.
But just had to throw that in there because what?
I remember reading that and thinking like, interesting. This is the sort of thing that I wanted in book one, the world building and stuff like that. But I remember reading it and being like, that's interesting.
Yeah.
However, 7-8 books in and 9 characters to keep track of. Can't handle this right now. I'm just going to move on and accept it.
Maybe this will be like one of those random things later that Aelin's like, Remember that time you told me about the forest sprites and or spirits, and now I brought them to the war against Morath, and they all just like show up or whatever. And she's like, surprise.
Yeah. I don't know. The fact that they're wholly unaware and unconerned with the affairs of it, they might, that would be a huge surprise if she somehow convinced them to care.
I know. It just feels like a random fact to get thrown out there. And I don't know, maybe it'll mean something later.
Yeah, I would assume it has to in some way, but I don't know how big it'll be.
Maybe it's in her new book that she's writing.
Twilight of the Gods, yeah. A girl can dream.
Anyway, so chapter 32. I'm the only one who wrote notes for this chapter. There really wasn't that much going on. It was just Dorian trying to figure out his whole magic shifting thing. And this line just made me laugh. It was the magic's sole command to let go. Let go of who and what he'd become since the collar and emerge into something new, something different. And I'm like, yes, Dorian, just let it go. Let it go. That's all I could think of the whole time.
He's like by himself. He just... starts like
in a mountain in the snow.
Yeah, I mean that's ideal.
Yes,
definitely.
It's his ideal Elsa moment.
I'd love for it to be like cut off right before he starts hitting the hard notes, though, and have Manon be like, "What the hell are you doing?" Just like singing on the mountainside.
How long have you been here? How much did you see?
Enough.
And then I just laughed, literally laughed out loud whenever he turned blonde. And then I think it was Astrid that was like, ugh, don't not look good that as a blonde. I was cracking up.
I thought of you when that happened. I was like, he's not going to like that.
No. No offense to blonde men out there. Just not a fan.
He's blonde. Right. Grown men aren't blonde. And chapter 33, I just had a note here when Coltane shows up instead of Gavin, because this just took me by surprise. I'd totally forgotten about this. Like, I was expecting Gavin. She pops up and you're just like, what are we about to find out? Like, it's like just so staggering. So I just had that note in there because I totally forgotten about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was about to fall asleep. Like, I was reading in a, like, using my little clicker on my Kindle. And then I was like, half asleep. Caltane, Rob. Caltane, what? Yeah. Woke right up. Read the whole conversation. And then I was like, okay, I just need to turn this Kindle off. I'm going to be up all night.
And continuing the theme of today's What the Hell, Sarah, with the God's Watch. Caltane says to Dorian, I am not allowed to say who dwells here with me. And he says, who forbids you from doing so? And in his POV, it says, if the 12 gods of this land were stranded in Aurelia, they certainly didn't rule over other realms. Caltane kind of smiles a little bit and she says, I'm not allowed to say either. There are other forces at work beyond what is tangible and what is known. And Dorian says, other gods? Caltane's silence was answer enough, but another time. He'd contemplated another time. Freaking Dorian.
Same though.
Yeah.
But what I want to know is that we already got a little nugget of something about the Sin Eater, the God of Truth, being like separate from the 12 gods of Aurelia. He's like some other being who came from somewhere else. So I'm not including him in, you know, the 12 gods. But he was also the one that Gavin like worked with or worshipped or whatever we want to call that. The Sin Eater was the one who like blessed Amaris to be able to like tell the truth or, you know, distinguish from truth and lies. And Gavin was the one that Dorian was trying to summon, but then got Caltane instead. So is Caltane with the Sin Eater? Like, is she with the God of Truth? Mm. And she's not allowed to say because Dorian would know if it was true or a lie. I don't know.
Oh, that's like, a good point.
I don't know. But that's, again, sending me on some more rabbit holes.
Yeah, when the first time she said, I'm not allowed to say, I was like, oh, that's convenient.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks.
I mean, like I said, same with Dorian, him asking, like, who forbids you? She's like, oh, I can't say. I would be in the same boat. Like, after I ask twice and she just smiles and doesn't answer, I'd be like, okay, screw it. I don't care anymore. Like, if I'm not getting the information, I'm not getting the information. I have more important things to do.
He could at least contemplate it. I need something.
He is another time. Yeah.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I only highlighted this part for our notes because this is something we've kind of discussed in the past of like, why do some people survive when they have a ring or a collar of a Vog and someone else doesn't? Dorian asks Caltaine, like, how did you survive? Like, how did you overcome it? And she said, because I raged against it, because I did not feel that I deserved the collar. The truth of her words slammed into him as surely as if she'd shoved his chest. I didn't know if that was maybe a reason why some do, is because they don't think that they deserve that and they fight against it and stuff. Mm. I don't know that Dorian necessarily did the whole entire time. I think he's true. I don't know.
He was like super down on himself at first.
Think about Kale too. And he wasn't even wearing a ring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Or a collar.
Mm-hmm. So I guess I still don't know.
Because Dorian had the collar right after he was like blaming himself for Sorsha, and then later on blaming himself for what happened to Kale and all this stuff that he was like, oh, I do deserve this punishment. It's punishment for what a loser I am. And he had to be snapped out of it.
I still think he kind of feels that way.
He's still atoning.
Yeah. Anyways. Okay, well, I thought I was onto something, but I guess not. I don't know the answer to that one still. But my last note for this chapter is just that I love that he can shift now. I think that that's another cool thing. He's literally can just do whatever the heck he wants, and he's epic and amazing.
Yeah.
And he gets to keep his clothes when he shifts, like a Fae does. I appreciated that little nugget of information since I was trying to connect that about Lysandra and stuff. So anyways, I am into it. I'm a fan.
He is the best. He's the best one.
Is he your favorite?
Yeah, totally. Best character.
Wow. Yay. Okay.
I would say him and Kale are like pretty close together, but Dorian would win just by what he can do. Like he has all this literal raw ability to him. I feel like he's probably the most powerful out of anyone in the whole cast of characters right now.
Yeah, probably.
In terms of both what he can do and the control he has over it. Because, I mean, Aelin's super powerful, has next to no control recently over it. It's all just been huge blasts, not the control that we saw earlier on when she, like, lit a city aflame but individually saved people. Haven't seen much of it. I don't know if that was a one-off or if it's just all, you know, whatever. But he has, like, really precise control over his powers. Burning through a jaw of a wyvern, like John said, is super intense. And I don't even picture him looking up to do it because he was so distracted at the time. Just
right.
Yeah, it's just like instinct. Yeah.
Yeah. But from the best to one of the worst, I don't know.
In
chapter 34.
Yep.
Chapter 34. I don't know how in-depth others are wanting to go into on this, but I'll just leave it as I wrote it. Adian is a jerk. He's a correct jerk, but he is like the biggest jerk right now.
I was okay here until Adian said that we would need a god's damned firebringer and not an untrained, useless shapeshifter against Morath. And then he kicked her out into the snow barefoot and basically naked with just like a cloak on.
Mm.
that was too much for me. Because sometimes he is right. Like, sometimes he's saying things that need to be said, but then he takes it way too far, like, every time.
Yeah.
He's a Winston.
Too big or too small?
Too big or too small. He either goes way too big or is, you know.
But it's pretty much always way too big.
Yeah, that's just what I was going to say and thinking of. Like, he never goes small. It's,
Like, his fears and his feelings about it all are 100% valid. And, like, him being stressed out and, like, needing Aelin and, like, all this stuff. But, yeah, he definitely should not have said those things. Or said it in the way that he said it. I feel like this is the same conversation we have about him every single time he says anything. Mm-hmm. And this is, like, our 15th time to have this conversation.
Originally, my defense for him was that their whole plan that we've gone over before, where he was, like, secretly siring children to fake be princes or whatever. That's an awful thing to do to someone, is to secretly plan that. And all that he did was call her a bitch. So I feel like she was more in the wrong at that point. However, all the things that he's, like, said and done now are starting to tip the scales to a little bit more balanced. But the thing is,
useless shapeshifter when she's literally been out here saving all of their asses for, like, three books straight.
For real.
Excuse me.
I told Lauren, too, though, like, this specific scene was slightly spoiled for me. And I don't remember where I saw it, but they were like, oh, the point at which he kicks her out of her tent or out of his tent. I was like, oh, I haven't seen that yet, but I'm sure it happens. Oh. That sounds like something he'd do or whatever. But I pictured it as like a literal, I think they said throwing out. I thought it was going to be like him throwing her out of the tent. And so when I came to it and he just said, get out. And then she left. I was like, oh, okay. So she like sort of played a part in willingly leaving. But I will say, I think Lysandra's just at the point where she needs to let it go. Because like she's put a lot of effort into trying to fix this relationship, whatever's left of it. And Adian's clearly not there for it. So at some point, you just have to cut your losses.
Like, I mean, yeah, but it's not even that she's trying to reconcile the relationship. She's just trying to, like, help them win the war.
To be a co-worker.
And, like, she's not retaliating when he lashes out at her.
I agree.
It's like, she's just trying to live her life, literally.
I think it does need to just come to that, though, where she just needs to say, like, look, we don't have to like each other, but we have to work together sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Kyle did say when we were talking at home, too, that, I mean, he kicked her out with no shoes on, but she could literally just shapeshift into something.
An animal that could take it.
Like an animal with fur, honestly.
Well, she was exhausted.
That was the one I think she,
it was just something we had talked about at home.
Also, was this the scene? I forgot to highlight it. Was this the scene where she comes into the tent and then realizes that she's still a horse?
She's still a horse. No, that's here.
Yeah.
Because they're in the meeting, and that's why she gets Ansel's coat.
She like walks in and she's like, why is everyone staring at me? A horse. Okay.
I know, but like the fact that she had like somebody dead on her for multiple days and they were like frozen all that stuff.
Oh, that's
leading
right.
Into this conversation. And obviously Adian doesn't know that. But like, girl's going through it. And then he's extra jerk on top of that. Like,
yeah.
Definitely made the blow hit harder for us as readers knowing all of that for her.
I'd have to imagine that like this would somewhat be re-traumatizing for her as someone who grew up trained to be at a point where she was probably used to being kicked out of rooms naked by men. That might be sort of a thing where it's like re-traumatizing in that aspect. I don't know if it'll like come up with that sort of thing later, but I it's in my theories later too that like I feel like she's eventually gonna get caught. I don't think there would be a big piece of like, ooh, you gotta stay hidden if it didn't like ever get caught in the book. And I don't know if that's gonna be something where that will be a turning point for Adian to be like, oh no, she got caught and I have to take care of her, versus him just getting even more angry at her for not keeping up the ruse. But I'll be interested to see when that happens. Who knows when? I don't know how far down the line, but
I'm convinced everybody already knows. I'm convinced.
I mean, some people have to.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense.
Have to.
Yeah. And John and Connor aren't saying anything. So that
because I don't remember you guys.
So I was hanging out with one of my friends this weekend who watches our podcast, and he was saying that he knows your guys' tells now because he's read the series. And so he thinks that he knows. Because he's read the series. He has not finished Kingdom of Ash. So like we've caught up to him or whatever.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And so he like knew stuff or whatever. And so he felt like he could tell your tell. So now that he's reading Kingdom of Ash with us actively, he feels like he knows things based off of John and Con's face.
Which is like honestly hilarious because sometimes I do know. Sometimes I really don't.
Yep.
One of my tells is probably just I have no idea what's coming. Did he tell you what he thinks the tells are?
No, he doesn't.
Are you watching for them now? Oh.
He doesn't want to ruin it for me.
Nice. Yeah.
What a good friend.
We'll have to get that info from him on like for the last episode.
Oh, yeah. So we can go back and find all the times.
Oh, yeah, like the bonus episode. And we'll talk about it.
Just we can be like, let's see if he was right. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I will say, too, as one last piece on Lysandra, I was surprised that Nox wasn't involved in that chapter at all. I thought it would very much be like, she gets kicked out. Nox is to the side being like, hey, you need a warm place sort of thing.
No, instead it's
they Ren. Become better friends. A Ren, too, yeah.
Always taking care of her.
Yeah.
Our listeners can't hear but my eyebrows. Ever since I said Ren.
The eyebrows are lifting.
Eyebrows.
Quickly.
Eyebrow.
Feeling it. I don't know. As the doc master for this book.
Oh, so Lysandra and Ren.
Important to point out any potentials. And I think I'd be okay with that. I think.
Lysandrin?
Lysandrin? Yes.
Yeah. I feel like that'd be the natural way to take it.
I'm going to like keep playing it out, but I'm definitely anti-Adian Lysandra.
Yeah.
I feel like even when he was first being a jerk, I was like, okay, he's having a moment and they're going to like resolve it, but I'm over it now.
It's a big moment. He's having a big moment.
Wow, we're still
this moment's been going on for months.
Yeah. Like one of those friends where you revisit them and they're still talking about something and you're like, oh, we're still on this.
Okay.
Yeah. They just need to have a sit-down talk that hopefully ends with them not being together.
I have a feeling Aelin's just going to come in and tell him he's being a big idiot and then he'll just go cry in a corner or something. I don't know.
I saw that you think that Aelin's meeting with Adian and Dorian's meeting with Kale, I think. The groups when they meet, that's your...
Are you giving away my thoughts and theories?
Only a little bit. I was only saying it because I think it's the opposite. I think...
Oh, no.
Aelin and Kale and Dorian and Adian's group.
We'll talk about it later.
We'll get there. Yeah.
Okay, so chapter 35... This is when Rowan just like very point blank says exactly in extreme detail what he does to Cairn. And it was like, oh, okay. Yeah, you just did all that. And she's just like, thanks. Like, all right, guys.
High five.
Sure. Just that he said, you know, that he ended Cairn and didn't regret it. But Aelin, .. Maeve was hers. And I was like, ooh, that's going to be epic. Whenever that happens, assumedly in this book, it's going to be an epic, epic showdown. Can't wait. And then I just like highlighted a couple things that Rowan said. I said that I had highlighted all of the things, but these are the ones that I really, really liked from him. But he had worked with her, helped her in whatever way he could. And if she never returned to who she had been before this, he would not love her any less. Rowan. And then he said, I told you once that even if death separated us, I would rip apart every world until I found you. And he gave her a slash of a smile. Did you really believe this would stop me? I was like, oh, Rowan.
Rowan. Stop.
And then her response to that was, you should have gone to Terrison. It needs you. And he immediately says, I need you more. I just love him so much and I love them. I just feel like their relationship wasn't it was just like settled. And so their relationship was just like, okay, cool. And there they are on the side. And oh, here's Dorian and Manon. And here's, you know, Kale and Irene. Oh, so cute. But like just to have them again and their little cute banter and relationship and love and romance and all the things. And I'm here for it.
And rocking the boat.
Oh, yeah. All of it. I'm living my best life over here. And then just for the little folk to give Aelin Mab's crown, that was surprising because I had kind of theorized that they would find it and that would be like a hint that Aelin was in Dornell in the first place, but I didn't think that the little folk would find it. So that was kind of a fun surprise for them to bring it up. But when Gavriel says like she's the queen of the little folk, does that mean she's like the queen of all Dornell? Like she's Maeve's heir? Is that what that meant?
I guess I was thinking that the little folk were mostly in Oakwald Forest, but if they're like in Dorinel, then that doesn't really make sense. Like if they're in Wendolyn right now.
Yeah.
But she's seen them in Aurelia too.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are like they have been mentioned in Oakwald Forest and kind of different parts of Aurelia, but they must be, maybe they just dwell outside of Dorinel. I don't think they're like in Dorinel, but I guess they're in Wendolyn, so I'm not sure.
But it was saying, like, you know, that she has Mab's crown because she's her heir too.
Right.
Which Mab's throne is what Maeve currently has.
Yeah, but she took the throne from them.
I get that. But, like, I'm just saying, is she technically next in line? Because Maeve doesn't have descendants. Maeve doesn't have children or whatever that we know
of. Well, she would be over Maeve.
Yeah, technically.
Yeah, she's the queen of Dornell.
Yeah, that's what they were saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. Is that what that means? Oh.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. I didn't really piece that
together.
No, but I
just read the words.
No, that's what
literally said. What it said.
It's crazy when you read.
I know, but Gavriel was saying like the queen of the little folk. But I was just confirming. Does that mean of all of Dornell, not just of the little folk? Because he gave Mab's crown.
Technically, I think like Rowan's family, because they're all royalty of some kind. Like he's technically a prince. I don't know that he's necessarily next in line. He has like a bajillion cousins who are also princes and princesses or whatever. Mm-hmm. But they're like royalty of Wendolyn, I think, as a whole. I feel like Dorinel's just kind of been its own thing since Maeve like took it over and just made it secluded.
He never said he was a crown prince.
Just right.
A prince.
Mm. Or would that be Gallen? That doesn't make sense.
He is the crown prince to, was it Wendolyn?
Yeah, wasn't it? But it's that he's
that
in
was
Ash
why
River.
She was sent there to kill them or whatever.
But then the Whitethorns are like their own royalty.
Hold on, I'll Google it.
I guess now I'm confused. Don't stop
Google
it.
How does Maeve die? That should answer it for me, right?
Don't Google things. I just don't know. Why giving Mab's crown specifically shows that she's the queen of the little folk. And who does that make? I mean, when you're a queen, you're a queen. We learned that episode 1 of this podcast. So if that's the answer, that's fine.
But I think they need to give her a little folk crown that really just like fits a finger and she wears it as like a ring, but it's a
or like the one Evangeline made Lysandra in the bonus chapter when she's a squirrel for forever.
the acorn hat. Yeah. I'll get this off my chest now since you brought her up. I can't hear Evangeline's name without picturing the Firefly from Princess and the Frog singing about Evangeline. And I'm tired of not saying that.
I think it every time, too. My Evangeline.
My Evangeline. She's the brightest star in the night sky.
She's not even in this chapter, Chunk.
That's amazing. Okay, wait, real quick. Mab is the one who the Ash Rivers descended from.
Yep.
So, yeah, I guess technically that would have been Wendolyn.
It does say she's the queen of Dornell and Wendolyn.
Okay. Who? Maeve?
Mab.
Mab. Oh.
Mab. Maura.
Oh. Well.
Maeve.
So she would be over both.
And that she started like the ancestral line of the Ash Rivers and Wendolyn. Hmm.
Interesting.
So she is basically queen of everything.
I mean, yeah.
It sounds like it. Yeah. At least the little folk would be recognizing her as queen.
Yes.
Go off, queen.
Deposed queen, I guess, if Maeve holds the throne.
Yeah. So. Sure.
Indisposed queen?
No, that's a queen who's using the restroom. A deposed queen. Their throne was taken from them.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay. After 36. This is just Aelin's thesis statement coming out of all of her torture and all the things that, sure, that she just went through and said that she would fight for it, claw her way back to it. Who she'd been before, she would show them what they wished to see, an unbroken firebringer. Aelin of the wildfire, she would show the world that lie as well, make them believe it. Maybe she'd one day believe it too. I highlighted it being like, oh, that's sad, like that she has to, like, she just needs like a minute to go through it. Like, and instead she just keeps putting up the walls and doing all the things, and like, she's just young and she needs to take a second. She needs a mental health retreat.
Yes,
exactly. And instead she, I don't know, trying to be her old self. So even the conversation she has with Lorkin later, and she's making jokes and she's kind of like poking fun at him with her interactions with Fenris about Lorkin. And I was like, I feel like she's doing a really good job. Like reading that, I felt like I could tell she was faking it. Like she is doing this right here where she is trying to show the world the lie and make everyone believe that she's unbroken and she's just herself again, you know, because she had just come from Rowan and was totally opposite of that. I don't know. I liked having the sentence of only so I know where she's at. Whenever she's putting up that front, and I'm reading that front that she'll play to everyone else, kind of thing.
Yeah. And 37, getting into it. I just had a note here because I have talked about Elide's magic that isn't necessarily magic. So this was like an aha moment. And this is when Lorkin mentions they're like in the cave, and he mentions that the Barrow Whites are nothing to fear if you're armed with magic. And she says, well, I don't have any, so forgive me if I remain alert. No, she'd once told him that while magic flowed in the Lochan bloodline, she had none to speak of. He'd never told her that he'd always considered her cleverness to be a mighty magic on its own, regardless of Annie's whisperings. I just wrote, ah! Anyway, I was right. I was right the whole time.
I highlighted this and wrote, John!
Yes. John, I knew it!
But just going with their conversation with Elide and Lorkin, and she was saying, I don't care about me. I didn't care about me on the beach. And he was like, well, I do. I don't know what we want to call their trope right now. Like he falls first, or like an enemies to lovers, or like whatever the heck is happening. But I am here for every second of it. And I'm a big fan, living my best romance life with the two of them in their little bickering, even though they're not together in any way whatsoever right now. But it's just so cute. I just love them.
It's the Hunchback of Notre Dame trope.
What?
She's a cripple who is stuck in a tower for most of her life, and then a beautiful person comes in and shows her freedom while learning how to love themselves.
Oh my God! Wow, the way all of our jaws just dropped.
Just blew it wide open over here.
He's cracked the code.
Everything has to be connected to Disney.
Yeah, Disney-fy everything.
Moving into me almost crying again, it gets me every time when Aelin and Fenris use their little blinking code outside of Dornell. They're still communicating that way to like check in on each other and stuff. And it's just so sweet. I also started tearing up at their whole conversation after he shifts back into his fey form and Aelin offers Fenris a way out of the blood oath. She's like, if you don't want it, and he's like, I want it. And then he says, it is my honor to serve this court and serve you. I love him so much.
I also started tearing up here specifically when she like just stopped and opened her arms. She was playing the role Rowan's been playing for her, but she did that to Fenris where she just like opened her arms and was like, if you want physical touch, I'm here. And then he hugged her and they had this whole moment. And then Rowan's off to the side, just like happy for them letting it happen. And he even had like a thought of him being like a territorial fey male or whatever, but he was just like letting them have this moment. And that whole moment just made me almost cry. And that's where I started tearing up, which led me into the next moment where I did cry. Fenris comes out of his human form whenever they are in the, is it the Barrow Whites? They're like trove of gold and stuff so that he could help put gold in his pockets and things. She found them rings and it was really cute for them. And I said, silently, Rowan grasped her own hand and eased on the emerald ring. To whatever end, he whispered. And Silver lined her eyes to whatever end. And then Silver lined my eyes and fell out of my eyes because I cried a lot. Like a lot.
And my favorite part about this was just like, it's not even like a big deal in terms of context, but my favorite part about this was being on the reread and having read the bonus chapters this time. In the deleted scene from Air of Fire, we find out that Rowan's favorite color is green and Aelin's is red, and she found wedding rings for each of them with the other's favorite color. So Rowan has the ruby, which is Aelin's favorite color, and then she has the emerald, which is Rowan. Wait, what? Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Which is Rowan's favorite color, and it was just so cute. I don't know why that made it even more adorable that it was their favorite.
I just assumed it was because red was like her fire and green because his eyes.
Oh, see, that's cute too.
But like knowing that they had actually said it was their colors, because I forgot that part in the bonus chapter.
Yeah,
is also really cute. Either way, it's adorable. And then I have a note for it later, but since we're talking about it now, I think it's the only note for chapter 38 was just that she had gotten out of the boat specifically to find the rings. Like she wasn't even going to get the money from the Troven stuff. It was just kind of like her excuse for being there to everybody else. She's going through all this stuff, but for her to have that thought to think of it in that moment was really cute for them.
I liked her reasoning of that too. Like, since all of her scars were gone, she wanted a reminder of this promise that she'd made to Rowan. Love that.
Well, and he said he had like an idea for a tattoo for them too. So that'll be something cute later.
He has a binder full of designs.
I drew these while you were gone.
That's what I spend those months doing. Just at night, feet kicking in the air, drawing.
For Terrison's first tattoo shop.
That's what he does on the side. She's the queen. He has a tattoo shop.
My only note for that chapter, for chapter 37, was since I talked about similarities with Lord of the Rings last time, it was immediately interesting to me that she used Barrow-ites specifically here, because that term was coined by Tolkien for his Lord of the Rings books. And he also based a lot of his work off like Norse mythology, which she also has. But he wholly like invented that term, didn't exist before him. And I only pointed out because of how similar I said Anya was becoming to Helm's Deep. And like, obviously he didn't invent those words, but putting them together in that way to make it for those creatures. Because I think Barrow just means like burial mound, and a white is an undead thing. So, but it was just interesting.
That is interesting. I didn't know that. I know she uses this term in Air of Fire too, but I don't think we've seen it since then. And most of the mentions in Air of Fire, I think they just refer to them as the Whites, but they do call them Barrow Whites specifically like once or twice.
I pointed it out way earlier in the series how she liked to refer to Selena back when she was just that as like moving like a wraith. Every time she said that, I would think of the wraiths from Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
But that's more on me than anything. I just thought it was interesting, the similarities between her like verbiage and how she is writing about this upcoming battle in Aniel.
Mm.
Well, I already mentioned my note from chapter 38 about her finding the rings specifically instead of just raiding the trove for monies. And then my only note for chapter 39 is just kind of like, why did we have this chapter? Like, it just felt really random. We haven't had anything from Kale. This is the only thing we have from them this entire chapter chunk. It just felt really random. I don't know, that the army is coming. Oh no. And then we get this moment with Kale's dad where his mom left. Then Kale's dad telling him about the pregnancy. Is like his mom leaving something super, super important that I'm missing? Or I guess, was it just the fact that we get this moment for Kale finding out about the pregnancy? Because then we leave them for another 6-7 chapters and we don't know anything. Like, it just felt really random.
Maybe the mom leaving thing will come back. Something about maybe the relationship that they had, because we haven't heard much about his relationship with her. It's always been about like, well, my dad kicked me out, my dad is this way, and whatever. So I don't know if he's close to his mom or any other family member or whatever. You never heard of him. I don't think we ever heard of him like writing to them or like sending them any sort of information or anything like that.
I think this was, I guess, a bigger deal for Kale than necessarily like anybody else, or maybe it was a big deal in terms of like his relationship with his dad, that his dad actually admitted that rather than saying that he like sent them there. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like we got something like very early on about Kale just kind of seeing his mom as someone who like went along with it and allowed his dad to like do all of the awful things he did. I think it was kind of a big realization for him that like, maybe of gratefulness or something, just that his mom finally had the sense and the nerve to leave. Yeah. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I do feel like maybe it was important in the sense, though, of like his dad telling him about the pregnancy is kind of a dick move in my mind, because that takes away the ability for anyone else to give him that news. And his dad did not do it in a way that's like, she's pregnant, congratulations. It's just like, you know, she's pregnant, right? Like, that's something else on your plate that I want you to think about right now. Not that you don't have enough going on,
right.
But like it took sort of the joy of that announcement away from him, because now Kale is stuck in a situation where it's like, does he approach Irene about it? Mm-hmm. And he's even thinking like how stupid he was to have not realized himself. But I also feel like these interactions with his dad also show where Kale himself got more of his like his own dickish tendencies. Because we, like earlier on in the books, like seeing his dad now, I'm like, yeah, a lot of what you do makes sense, I guess, from what you grew up with. Or even the like self-loathing that he has for himself. Like, obviously, his first response to being wrong would be hating himself for it, because that's what he was trained to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. This was a real dick move of Kale's dad. I feel like I was maybe more shocked by this on my first read, but for some reason I was thinking this whole time that Kale already knew about it. Maybe because we talked about it on the podcast.
Because he was there.
He was here. I don't know. I just, for some reason, I forgot that, like, maybe because also we were talking about how Irene suddenly knew everything. Like, she knew who Aelin was when they had that conversation with his dad. And so I guess I thought, like, if Kale was going to go through the trouble of telling her everything before they saw him, like, she would have clued him in on that. But I forgot she was being sneaky about it.
Yeah. Which I could see why, because, like, she knows that they're doing a lot of stuff right now, and it may not be the best time to announce this.
Well, like, what an awful timing. We're staring at an army who's literally walking towards us. Oh, by the way, your wife, who's also here, is pregnant. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's all we see of them this chapter chunk. So hopefully they're doing good, and we'll see them next episode. Chapter 40. This is back with Manon and Dorian. And this is Manon saying, I'm going to the Farian Gap to whatever the host remains there under Petra Blueblood's command to ask them to join us. I only highlighted that and brought it up because we did just leave Kale and Irene's POV, but that was Sartak's plan, was to like go through the Farian Gap. Assumedly they all meet up there. I mean, I guess we have already seen Manon and Dorian and all of them go to the gap. So maybe they'll leave and all the witches will be friendly. And then a Rook and Wyvern army will fly to Terrasen for the good guys or something. I don't know.
I like it. But
yes, something's going to happen in the Farian Gap in a good way, hopefully this time. While they're like making the plan to go to the Farian Gap, Dorian and Manon are kind of arguing with each other. And Dorian says, "We will lose this war if I do not go. How do you not care about that?" And she says, "I care. I care if we lose this war. I care if I fail to rally the Crokins. I care if you go into Morrath and do not return, not as something worth living." I just love that she cares about him. She's only going to say it in a really heated, angry way. And he also said he cares about her in a really heated, angry way before. And maybe one day they'll actually tell each other in a nice, lovey way. But for now, this feels how they communicate with each other is by yelling at each other.
And we have feelings.
So maybe something will continue out of that. But I don't know.
They're still the best.
I know. It's like, I freaking love them so much, but they don't really have a relationship. They're just kind of sleeping together. And I want them to be so much more than that. We're getting there. We're getting there.
Chapter 41. I just had to highlight one of my favorite Aelin lines. This is when she's starting to kind of open up to Rowan and explain some of the things that Maeve put her through. And she says, she's talking about all the alternate realities that Maeve was spinning for her of different versions of their story. But she says, "The male I fell in love with was you. It was you who knew pain as I did, who walked with me through it and back to the light. Maeve didn't understand that even if she could create the perfect world, it wouldn't be you with me. And I would never trade this, not for anything." It's like one of my favorite lines from her in this series.
Mm-hmm. That was pretty good. I did like that scene where she's saying, "Oh, Maeve got it all wrong. She didn't know what I wanted," even though she was literally in her head, couldn't figure it out. I had highlighted a quote from Rowan to Aelin, I think in the same conversation, a little bit later on when she was sort of telling him what she intended, and he was just like, "Do you know what I wish? I wish that you had told me when you realized it. I wish you had told me then." And I was just like, that's me to everyone about everything in this entire series. Like, that could be said to any character at any point and it be accurate portrayal of my feelings.
That is Kyle's reading arc in a nutshell, right there.
Oh my gosh. I also put in here when Aelin says Terrasen needs a king and Rowan says, "I have no intention of ruling Terrasen without you. Adian can have the job." And I put literally Kyle at everyone in Empire of Swords.
At this point though, I'm just like, just give the land to Dorian. Like, he'll handle it better. You can't give this to Adian.
King of Aurelia at this point. Yeah,
just do it. Everything that his dad was constantly trying for as of all, like, you just give him the land. He deserves it.
Well, in the same conversation, Rowan says to her, and my final "Rowan is the literal best" quote for the episode was just that, "We will face it together. He swore again. And if the cost of it truly is you, then we'll pay it together as one soul in two bodies." First of all, freaking adorable sentiment. If that actually happens in this book, I will not be okay. I will not recover emotionally if both of them die. If we follow these characters for literally like 6-7 months of my life, this in depth, and they die.
Well, they're gonna
die. I will not be okay. For thousands of years, Kyle, they're supposed to settle and be together for thousands of years. They're not supposed to die at the end of this book. I'm not prepared.
Wanda. Stay tuned.
Chapter 42.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
The only note I had for this chapter, because it kept going back to Aleed's expression during this conversation where Aelin offers the blood oath to Lorcan, just kept going back to Aleed and saying she was standing, watching everyone, mouth agape, or like her jaw was fully open, hands on her throat. So I just put Aleed for this whole chapter and a gif of someone just going
like jaw on the floor.
For the whole chapter from beginning to end, she's just standing there like, what is going on? I just thought it was such a funny visual.
Me too. Like, I was not expecting a blood oath offer for anyone, let alone two people in relative close chapters. That really surprised me. I mean, it made sense whenever she like played it all, like set it all out, and it made sense for Lorcan to accept it for all the same reasons. Yeah. But like, I was surprised by it. I did not see it coming. But this is the line I was talking about earlier with Fenris. He was saying, like, if I tell you he's a prick and a miserable bastard to be around, will it change your mind? And I said, Lorcan snarled. But Aelin snorted, isn't that why we love Lorcan, though? First of all, yes. But second of all, this is the line I was talking about earlier where she's, you know, trying to bring back that swagger, they keep calling it, or just that general attitude that she has. And then when Lorcan actually does the blood oath and like tastes her blood, it said the taste of her jasmine, lemon verbena, and crackling embers. And I just wrote, candle!
Candle watch.
So that's another one.
That would be a good one. I want that candle.
It could be one of those ones that it sounds like the wood fire, you know what I mean?
Woodwick like candles?
Yeah.
Put some pop rocks in there.
Yep.
My last note from this chapter was in Lorcan's POV, it says he half wondered why the queen didn't offer the oath to Gavriel, but then that thought gets cut off like when she says something else. So I guess my question was just like, why do you think she didn't offer the oath to Gavriel? Was it just because she felt like she could trust him with Adia being part of her court?
Yeah. My thought was that she just felt like it wasn't her call to make, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like Adian hasn't decided if Gavriel's a person in his life yet. And she's kind of leaving it up to Adian to figure out his daddy issues before he would make his dad
bind him.
Yeah. To the court for forever.
That's fair.
Yeah. I think maybe she's leaving it up to Gavriel, really.
I mean, maybe.
Everyone else said it, so I feel like I had to throw something in there.
That's funny. Anyway. All right, chapter 43. This is Manon like making her plea, maybe her speech to the rest of the Iron Teeth witches that are there at the Farian Gap. And it just said that she was attempting to make an Iron Teeth Kraken alliance, perhaps one to break our curse at last. And that would be really cool if on the side, we have, obviously, we're going to have the main story, hopefully, of them defeating Erewhon and whatever happens over there. And then on the side, Manon and all the witches, and they get to have their land back and all the things. So I hope that that happens. That would be really cool. And it just said that it is time that we became better than our foremothers. There is a better world out there, and I will fight for it. And I was like, yeah, you will, Manon. Do the things.
Yeah, Manon.
Yes, and all the witches do the things too. So I'm excited about that.
What I was not excited about was in chapter 44, where freaking Erebin shows up in Aelin's nightmares And at least we knew that this was a nightmare from the beginning. But Lauren, you were just saying in the last episode that you were worried that, like, Aelin escaping, was that the last episode or the one before? That Aelin escaping was like another one of Maeve's mind tricks.
Oh,
and so then this chapter started and it almost seemed like that, where in her POV, she's like, oh shit, like this was just another one. But then Arabin shows up and it's like even more of just her past haunting her in this nightmare. And I just, that made me mad that he's still coming back in Kingdom of Ash. We killed you 3 books ago.
I literally rolled my eyes and audibly groaned like, oh, this guy.
Go on, get him.
I honestly thought kind of the same thing too, where I was like, I'm surprised that he's still threatening enough to her to show up in her nightmares. Like, they wholly handled that situation. So I mean,
childhood trauma.
That's true. Yeah.
True. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then I just had a question here. Aelin and Fenris are talking about Connell, and then Fenris asks quietly, do you want me to tell you about it? He didn't mean his brother. She shook her head and said, I know enough. I know enough. I don't know what he was talking about, though. If he wasn't talking about his brother, was he talking about like what happened with Maeve after Connell died? Like before he came back in the room with Aelin, maybe?
It might have been what was happening to her during the time she wasn't fully conscious or aware of what was happening.
And like he would always say, like, this is real.
Yeah.
So do you want me to tell you what was real or what was not real or something?
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oof. I don't like either of those options. Okay. I was just curious.
Well, wow. I did highlight the things you talked about, but the thing I put in here was the very last line of the chapter, since this is the last one, where it just said, Cauldron sang as she unsheathed it. What? Her mate just pointed to the skies, to what flew there. And that's the cliffhanger we're left on. What is flying there? What is going on?
We decided it was Santa.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, oh, oh. Merry Yulemas.
That's it. That's the chapters.
Wow.
That's it.
It would be about that time, wouldn't it? Because it's been a couple months since... It's been 2 months, 3 days, and 7 hours since she was captured. So...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but...
We were already in sort of the fall time again. So I feel like it would be around
winter.
Yulemas time.
It's snowy.
Assumedly that Yule Miss happens.
It's beginning to feel a lot like Yule Miss.
Beautiful.
I did that a cappella once. We could try it too.
Get some fan art of all the Throne of Glass characters. Peanut style skating on an ice rink.
Get on it, Connor.
Little fleet foot on the piano.
Our next shirt.
There you go. Moving right along into our thoughts and theories for the final book in the series.
Oh my God.
Wow, Kyle, you do have a lot in here.
You wrote a lot. This is because, said, it's me. I'm comfortable calling a shot.
Okay. 40% into the book, Kyle's here. Calling it.
Already 40%? I've been paying it.
Call him Lil Troy.
I don't pay attention to the percentage of the book, I guess.
Well, it's 39% is where we're at right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, don't lie. It's not as impressive as 40. So I got excited. I pay attention to how much time I have left in the chapter when I'm reading on my Kindle. And that's
you have
the
7 minutes left in the next chapter.
Yeah. And then I try to beat it. I'm like, 5 minutes. Yeah, right. I'm trying to read real fast.
So relatable, though.
It keeps me motivated to keep going. If I see it's like, you have 60% of the book left, I'm like, oh, God. But if I turn a page and I'm like, there's 12 minutes in this chapter, I'm like, I can do 12 minutes or less. Anyway. I don't have many thoughts on this section that I didn't already voice in our, you know, whole episode of thoughts, but I do have theories that have been percolating and I think are ready enough to serve.
Percolating.
So, yeah.
Wow.
I think that Aelin has lost a lot of her confidence, obviously, through Maeve and Karen's ministrations. I, however, have not forgotten that for those 2 months, 3 days, and 7 hours, she's basically been stockpiling power. And it goes over this in this chapter section. We didn't really touch on it, but she's literally like having to like shove it down. It like wants to get out. And will more than likely use it to kill a bunch of folk with Adian's group, or she'll meet with Kale's group and use it there to do the same, kill a bunch of people, or break the dam, or stop the flood caused by breaking the dam. So there's a lot of ors there.
Very specific. Thank you.
Yeah. I feel like I'm more comfortable.
All the options so everyone thinks
that's what I said I do. I feel like she will go with Kale, though, because I'm like looking at the map of where they'd be, and I'm like, they're closer to them, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, but they're going to the water.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a dam, so right near the water. She can end up there. They're going to get there and go, damn!
So the other thing.
I also said this earlier, but I think Lysandra's going to get found out because there's not a reason for her not to. It wouldn't be a concern in the story if it weren't eventually going to happen. And I feel like she'll eventually be forced to beat Aelin in a situation that's dangerous, sort of like what happened in the meeting. And she'll either get called out, like the last time the guy almost called her out by calling her a shifter, or she'll get hurt enough as Aelin to shift into something else or into herself in front of everyone. And I'm hoping that Lysandra just breaks it off with Adian. He already has. I think she needs to move on as well. And Adian better not get fussy about it, because the way he's acting, he should have already moved on. If she breaks up with him and he's like, but I love you, I'm like, shut up, dude.
Yeah. We'll all be like, get out.
I think Kale's dad is going to be put into his place by Irene, or maybe Kale, but that seems less likely. Irene's kind of been fronting that for him.
Yeah, she's
amazing.
Yeah. I feel like it doesn't matter who does it as long as it's done. Mm. Kale outranks him, I assume, as the hand of the king. This guy is just a lord, right?
Yeah.
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 And get a schmuck. Over yourself. Yeah.
So he needs to pull that card. Hand of the king beats lord. Sorry. I hope Dorian and Manon get to better terms when he goes to Morath. But if they don't, I get it. Like Lauren said, they're not really in a super tight relationship. They're bed buddies.
Yeah, they are.
FWBs.
I feel like visiting Petra will make the other witches come for Manon. And I only say that because I feel like there wasn't really a reaction from them. They just let them live, which is fine. And some of them may join, but I feel like some of the others could easily go to the matrons and be like, hey, guess who stopped by and said all this crap about you, sort of thing.
You'll never believe who came to the gap.
Here's the hot goss. You the only get goss. For the Petering book club. Dorian, though, is my biggest theory. I've been thinking a lot about him lately. Am I right? I think he's going to go to Morath and will find the third word key using his shifting to like disguise himself and infiltrate Morath. I'm really hoping, more so than theorizing, just hoping that he will encounter Maeve while he has the keys and they can have like a literal war of the minds where she could try to do something to him and he quickly learns her magic and like fights back with it. I think that would be so cool.
Nice.
And I feel like it's possible because Maeve's the only other player, aside from Erewhon himself, who's like actively hunting the keys. So if he's finding third and maybe has the other two on him, I don't know if there's some sort of like all three are together. They act like a beacon to anyone who wants them sort of thing. But I want it to happen because Dorian is the best character in the series and has the most potential to be a good and decent ruler.
Hear, hear.
Sure.
Huzzah.
And that's my rant.
Wow.
Or the opposite of everything I said, just in case it's that too.
There was only ors for Aelin because no one ever knows what she's doing. You know why?
Yeah.
She doesn't tell anyone. Okay. For me, I'm getting confused on the timeline of each place that we are. Because for a while, I think really just at the beginning of the book, It was like, it's going to take so many weeks for the Coggins armies to go this way and so many weeks for Ansel's armies to come that way. And now it's like we jump to everyone's POVs and it's like several days have passed. But is it just the days that I read? Like if I'm with Dorian and Manon and I read about their days and then I jump over to Kale and it's been several days, is it just the same days that passed and now I'm at the same moment in timeline? And now I'm jumping over to Aelin and then they're in the... Yeah. underground for a couple weeks, and so then is it the same weeks that are passing over here for Adian and them? Like, you know where I'm at, like
Lauren, you're not even considering time zones.
Dang it, I'm really confused. The only reason I bring all this up is because I feel like Kale, like really everyone, is in some big fight that's about to happen. Mm-hmm. Because like with Kale and Irene and them at Aniel and maybe Manon and them being close by, I guess, because it's on the other side of the gap, or I don't know, whatever. I keep saying the gap and I keep thinking of the clothing store. They're just on the other side of the gap. And then with Aelin and them traveling, but they're like going by boat. So like, would they accidentally run into the Coggins fleet that they're going next to, or are they going to just end up somewhere, you know, like where is everybody at and what's going on? And if we're in the middle of a fight, should I be like, oh, but the timeline means that the Coggins army should be right around the corner and they're going to come save the day. And instead it's like, I have no idea what to be hoping for in any situation, because I just feel like the timeline is completely lost to me right now. And maybe I could have stuck with it if I really tried, but I'm just going to keep riding the waves and hope for the best and that it all makes sense at some point down the line.
That's where as you do with Sarah chapters. J.
Sometimes. Yeah.
One day, maybe I'll look up like an actual timeline when I finish the book, if I really care that much by then. But for now, I'm just putting it out there that I'm very confused. Anyways, I have a feeling in the next chapter chunk, there is just going to be like a lot of fighting. It's just setting it up for all the different places. And then hopefully some reunions. Like, I think that it's going to be Kale and Dorian, since they're both kind of at the Farian Gap area, or like Sartak and Nezrin were saying that that's where they'll like fly through the gap to get to the north, and that's where Dorian is currently. And then if Aelin can continue, like Aelin and company can continue up to Orinth, and that's kind of like what Adi and all of them are. They're going to Perinth, but still like they're all in Terrasen. So I don't know. I just feel like everyone needs to meet up at some point. We're near like 50% of this book. I feel like something, like we've had major things, but not like to the actual plot of the book. You know what I'm saying? Like the actual
over here
plot,
rubbing his hands together.
The actual plot of the book, which is these word keys and like Erewhon, is not being solved. Like we're just on all these little side quests and adventures, and with like the
side quest of saving the main character.
I mean, no, I'm just saying like a main, but also like the witches and stuff. Like that's not really main story. I don't know. So I'm ready for something like big to happen with the actual story that I'm supposed to be reading. I know that we like have been doing it with the podcast, and so we're taking it week by week, and I've generally been okay with that for this whole series. Like even on times that it's been like a lot of hype, and I'm just like, okay, but it's for the podcast, so I can wait and whatever. And I'm really at a point where I don't want to wait for you guys anymore. Like I'm just done waiting, and I'm just ready to finish this dang book already, because I'm like into it when I'm reading it, and then I have to stop and it just sucks. And there's been so many people who have said they were reading with us and now have finished because they just couldn't wait. And I'm one of those people, but I'm still waiting because I'm actually in the podcast and I have to actually wait. So
sorry.
I just want to know what happens.
Let me ask you real quick, because I just realized we didn't really talk about it. I assume Con and John know. Do you have any thoughts about what was coming in the air? Like what was actually flying towards them?
Oh, not Santa. Like what actually it is.
It's the moon, darling.
Love is in the air.
Say a word, no. Throw a lasso around.
Where are they at? They're in Fenharrow, or they're like right outside of it. So
I don't think it does it ever say where they are exactly?
It says like someplace like a couple of hours outside of Rifthold. Close to Fenharrow, something like that. Or like a,
they gave very Midwest directions.
Some random inn.
A few hours outside the main city.
The poor inn guy, too, was like, he wasn't good at his anything, cooking or keeping his inn clean. And I was like, dang, drag this guy through it.
like he's just crying.
The man is just trying to make a living.
Well, because it's either got to be one of the two things that we know fly. The
birds.
Wyverns or the rooks.
Planes, though.
Well, Superman.
It could be raptors, guys.
Oh, yeah.
I learned about what raptors are. Mm-hmm.
Yes, do you think he's pointing out an eagle in the sky? Could be an owl. Could be a message.
It's a meteor. It's a meteorite. And now there's all of a sudden aliens or something.
And everyone dies.
That's how the book ends. Oh, crap. None of it mattered.
The rest of the pages are blank.
Suckers, you just wasted all this time.
What a good prank that would be to like thicken your book so people get to it and they're like, wait, what?
At the end of a series, like a decade long prank.
Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna say 50-50 shot wyvern rook. I'm probably gonna go with rook because that makes more sense to me. I don't know why
the fact that he
a
came
single
to them
wyvern would be there.
And wasn't like, I mean, she like took her sword out, but he was just like pointing. He wasn't like, we got to fight and do things, you know?
That
like,
meme of a guy with a butterfly.
So it makes me think that it's not an enemy. But.
Yeah. That's why I would say rook more than anything, because a wyvern could be a witch out to kill them. But I don't know why a witch would be alone. Hmm. A rook could be a scout, and they would know that it's a potential ally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does it say that it's just one thing?
It just says something was flying toward. I believe it was a singular something. But I'd have to go check, I guess.
It just says, her mate pointed to the skies to what flew there. So it could be all the rooks. It could be the Coggins' other half of the army.
It could be. Or again, with that mindset, it could be a bunch of wyverns. But I also don't know why the witches would go after them. They don't really have a beef with them.
Brown beef.
Somebody's got beef.
Oh, man. You said that like the Vine kid was like, I smell like beef.
Brown beef.
I smell like beef.
Okay, let's wrap this episode up.
Yeah.
With a cry counter. I cried two times, once for Fenris when I thought he was dead and then he got the blood oath, and once with Aelin and Rowan with their little ring exchange. So that brings me to 26 times that I have cried in this series.
Wow.
Thank you.
Yeah, amazing. Wow.
That's a record.
I mean, I don't think since it I'm is. In first, every time I cry sets a new record.
That's what I mean. Yeah. It's a record for the podcast.
Setting the bar for future reads. Uh-huh.
For me, I was at 11, but I cried once. I had a big old cry for Fenris in this chapter section. So that brought me to 12.
Gentlemen?
Nothing.
None, yeah.
All right.
Well, that's it for episode 27. Join us next week as we continue Kingdom of Ash with chapters 45 to 57. Our reading schedule is pinned on Instagram if you'd like to follow along.
And don't forget to rep your favorite podcast with cute new merch on our website at betweenpagesandfriends.com. Yeehaw. It's linked in those show notes or description box below. While you're there, go on and sign up for a monthly newsletter and check out our Patreon for our community of amazing book. I don't know how to say that word.
Aficionados.
Until next time, stay nerdy, stay nerdy, stay nerdy, and stay nerdy.
Nerds!
A bunch of nerds! Man.
You got a real nerdy week.
That was amazing.
It was too late to change it. I didn't do wordy, and then I said nerdy twice. So,
I love it.
I'm just kidding. Keep it rolling through there.
Yeah.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.